Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Tuesday, October the 9th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And we welcome Wendy Dillard back. I haven't talked to you in about 5 days, but I imagine your 5 days have been pretty good because life is good when you're in an abundant lifestyle, and that's where you are, isn't it?
Absolutely. That is where I am.
It's a great place to be.
Actually, I think that's where we all are. We just don't always realize it or feel our way into it.
Which is the topic for today, actually, isn't it? Feeling our way into it.
I did that on purpose.
That was a nice segue then, I have to say. So before we get into the topic, because once you get going, I can't stop you and there's no point in trying. So I want to get our promos in now, okay?
Are you saying that once I get going, law of attraction gives me one idea after another and the momentum builds and builds and builds?
Beautifully stated. I like that. Very, very good. Is that original?
Yeah, I just said it in response to what you said.
Okay, very good. Now, the two promos we always like to put out near the beginning of the show are, first of all, if you're not yet a subscriber, please do subscribe. The instructions are on the homepage at loatoday.net. And most people know how to do it, but basically you just go to your podcast software and do a search on LOA Today. But just in case you need a little help, maybe you're a little tech challenged, the homepage of loatoday.net is the place to go. And secondly, for all subscribers, both new ones and long-term ones and everybody in between, please keep posting on the social media that you're listening to loatoday.net because it's really, really helping. I know we keep saying that, but it's really, really true. And we want to keep building it up until we get to the point where we're reaching thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. Can you imagine 1 million people every episode getting a dose of happy and just feeling better and attracting more of what they wanted? I mean, that just staggers the imagination.
So awesome.
Wouldn't it? Oh, my God. That just... Oh, I get chills whenever I think about it. So that's where we're trying to get to, folks. And with your help, we're going to get there. So those are our two messages. And now I turn it over to our co-host, Wendy, and I'll probably just sit back and relax for a while because she just goes.
Hey, well, you are not off the hook. I require that you be a part of this conversation.
Oh, all right, all right. Well, I'll put in an occasional uh-huh and a hmm, yeah, oh, yeah, sure. Mm.
No laziness on your part. I think I'm going to purposely take moments to stop and ask you a question. And so what is it that you heard? Or how would you summarize what I said or something?
Oh, God, this is like the teacher saying, there will be a quiz.
Exactly, exactly. No taking naps during this
That's
show.
That's right. Oh, God.
I know we've said I could do a show by myself, but I'm not doing a show by myself. I'm doing it with my co-host.
This is true. This is true. Okay. All right. So I will deliberately participate today. How about that? That's my form of deliberate creation for the day. I'm deliberately participating.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, I think where I want to start, not that I know where this is going to go, but because I follow my feelings sometimes lead to thoughts or memories or whatnot. And right now I'm starting with a movie that I saw this weekend, which is quite unusual for me. I don't think I've been to a movie theater in probably 10 years.
What movie is that?
I saw A Star is Born with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga.
Oh, I didn't know there was a remake. Okay.
Oh, my God. It was phenomenal. Now, I'm a huge fan of that movie. I saw the one, don't quote me on this, it was done in the, I think, 30s or 40s. And then Barbara Streisand and Christopher Christopherson did it in, I think, the late 70s.
Yep.
And I guess Bradley Cooper, he produced this puppy and he went to whoever owned the rights on The Star is Born, got permission, and they rewrote it to make it prevalent to today. And he co-stars with Lady Gaga and my God, what a fabulous, fabulous movie. Now, because I already knew the storyline so intimately well, because it's one that I've loved and, watched many, many times in the other versions, I kind of knew what to anticipate, but these two characters brought it so current, so real to today, that I was almost able to forget the previous versions while I was watching it. And I went with my dearest friend, Rhonda, who's also a coach, and how she conned me, and I say that jokingly, into going to see a movie because I haven't wanted to go to a movie theater in years. She said, you know, they have reclining seats now. And I'm like,
those are great. At the AMCs, oh, my God, I love those.
Yeah. So she goes, I will find us you know, a movie theater between the two of us that has the reclining seats. And I'm like, all right, that enticed me. Okay, cool. But I have to say the reclining seat experience made going to a movie theater totally worthwhile for me.
Oh, yeah. It's like watching on a big screen in your living room. It's wonderful.
Yeah. So as she and I are reclined in our seats, you know, watching, there was one feeling. I was just inundated with emotion. And it's so well written, so well acted. The storyline is awesome to begin with. But, oh, my gosh, for those who feel, who allow themselves to suspend disbelief while you're in a big movie theater and just allow yourself to experience the feelings that come from the drama that unfolds, it was huge. And, I mean, I thought I was doing really good holding back the tears. You know, Rhonda started a little bit earlier than me. But by the final song, I was boo-hooing up a storm. We're like, please, please. And she and I could almost not speak.
Wow.
And which is really unusual for the two of us because we always have lots to say.
Oh, that's funny.
But I said, this is why we plan to have a meal afterwards so yeah. We can decompress and we can download and, you know, talk about it. And, oh, my goodness, we really just talked about how we felt, what we felt throughout the movie. And some of the feelings we felt because it was the actors on the screen, but she and I were both experiencing like a global conscious awareness of how individuals on our planet are handling certain types of things and yet not.
Like what? I mean, what are you talking about exactly? Can you be specific? Maybe you can't. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I can. So basically, the movie, if you've never seen it, is about, you know, an entertainer. Bradley Cooper plays an entertainer. He's kind of a rock star. You know, he has a huge following, plays in front of huge stadiums. And through a quirky set of incidences in the beginning, he meets this woman. And she's in this really dive kind of bar singing a song. And he's like, whoa, he recognizes this incredible talent.
Uh-huh.
Well, they kind of start up a relationship immediately, and he's so enamored with her voice and her ability to write songs on the spot. And I mean, she just flows with this creativity. He pulled her onto his stage in front of this stadium and kind of introduced her. And she's like, no, don't do this to me. And he's like, well, if you don't go out there, I'm singing your song anyway. And he starts singing it, which eventually pulls her out. And then they sing it together. And basically this launches her career.
Mm, right.
But she's very aware from the beginning. She doesn't want to be with him because she sees right off the bat he's an alcoholic.
Ah.
And his behaviors are like not what she wants to connect with. But he's so in love with her talent. It's like he sees the real her. And I really believe from a feeling perspective, the moment he didn't just see her sing and hear her sing her song the first time he met her, I believe he felt it on the deepest level. And I believe by feeling, he was really connecting to who she really is. And when the two of them started to get to know each other, she'd ask him questions and she was getting to who he is because he was feeling, and it was so apparent how he was expressing himself in a very vulnerable way and he was feeling what he was speaking. And I couldn't help watch it knowing who I am, I can't not see this movie through the lens of Law of Attraction. It's like, I even tried at one point to turn that off because it felt almost like it was getting in my way, but it was like, I can't not, because who I've evolved to become is a woman who lives the Law of Attraction. And so, you know, these two have this unfolding relationship and there's all sorts of things that are going on. And I don't want to give away the end of the movie for those who haven't seen it yet, but the feelings that this man is experiencing and acting out through alcoholism and cocaine, you know, and he's sniffing, I think maybe it's heroin. I don't know. I don't do drugs, so I don't even know what it is, what the white powder is that you snort. But it's like he kept doing all these behaviors, and she's saying, you know, you have to stop because this is like interrupting our life. But he couldn't. And I think what my takeaway was from the movie was how powerful he was feeling what he was feeling, but he didn't know how to express it, except through song. But even that wasn't doing it for him after a while. And it's like what I was looking at, again, through the lens of law of attraction, is how every feeling he was experiencing was a message from his inner being, trying to communicate something with him almost desperately. But he kept tuning out the feelings through drugs and alcohol. And the only time he was really feeling was when he was expressing his music when he wasn't high.
Right.
And I was just blown away. I mean, first of all, the movie, like I said, was awesome. But I so connected to the feelings that humanity experiences, because I recognized that this movie was not just a movie, but when I was experiencing what I was experiencing, I knew I was experiencing it on a very global level. And Rhonda was too, and we talked about what these feelings mean to us. And we were tapping into our inner beings. Now hers is called RB, which stands for Rhonda Burns, and mine's Gwendolyn, which I've expressed that my inner being is now called Gwendolyn. It makes it more personal for both of us that we have names for our inner beings.
Okay.
And as we were sitting having, you know, our meal together, and we're both checking in with our inner beings, we were so aware of how much of humanity, and maybe not the audience that you and I are talking to right now, but at the same time, probably still a lot of our audience that we're talking to right now, doesn't know what to do when they have a feeling. And
be specific now, about that. When you say doesn't know what to do, what do you mean by that?
Well, because, okay, in the simplest way, every time we have a thought, we have an associated feeling. And every time we have a feeling, if it doesn't feel good to us, that's our indication that what we're feeling is not the same thing that our inner being thinks about us or thinks about that situation, and is really letting us know that that thinking is incorrect. It's based on a lie, based on a false premise. There's something faulty with it. It needs some adjusting, but oftentimes we don't know that. Or we've experienced that negative feeling so many times, we've stopped paying attention to it, which is like not paying attention to a sign, when you're out in the road that says road ahead closed, and you just keep driving and fall off a cliff. And that happens to us metaphorically when there is something going on in our life that doesn't feel good, but we either don't know what to do with it or ignore it, or it's too scary to actually experience, so we shove it down and deny it. We are missing out on these really crucial, vital messages that our inner being is wanting to speak to us in order for our life to be one of joy and pleasure. But when you're not heeding those messages, you end up just feeling the pain of those negative feelings and whatever is associated with it. And so this is what I was recognizing, how, you know, I've talked about this before, how, like, well, let me say it this way. I'm very aware that what I bring to our show is a depth of personal transformation, because that's where I live. That's where my heart is. And I was reminded on an even bigger scale that there is so much call for us to transform our thoughts on a deep, meaningful level, but so many of us don't do it because we don't even recognize that it's there for us to do.
That's an interesting word you chose, call. Call suggests that it's like a voice coming from somewhere else.
Let's just say that I the calling for me to really engage my life in a way to help other people have personal transformation was given an exclamation point on such a level after watching this movie. I can't not do what I know I'm called to do.
So calling, I guess in this case, is more like an internal calling.
It's an internal calling.
Okay.
It is giving my life a level of mission like I've never known before.
Mm.
And I've been asking, because I've been desiring to have, you know, personal transformation as my career for so long,
mm-hmm.
that I'll be honest, I kind of lost the, it's funny, I lost the passion, I lost the fire, I lost the zeal for doing it. I knew I wanted to be out of the constraints of a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
That was an easy thing.
Right.
But now I'm here. Now I've landed in my new career. And I went, oh, I'm here. Yeah, I know I like coaching. Yeah, it's fun.
But such enthusiasm.
there wasn't a sense of real fire and passion under me. And I've been asking for a really solid direction to be ignited. Because it's one thing to put my shingle out and say, okay, I'm now open for business, you know, because I now have unlimited hours to do it. Well, semi-unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
And I love my clients. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
And if somebody listening wants to call me, you know, and start working with me as a coach, oh, trust me, I'm 100% in. But the overall desire to make my business bigger when it comes to, quote, just the coaching piece, didn't feel like it had the fire and the zeal that has been sustainable.
Which actually makes sense, because in the past, particularly at the early stages where you were talking about Project X with us, you kind of explored a number of different things in terms of where it could go. And I get the impression that those explorations are ongoing, really.
They are. And it's like I've been exploring on a continual basis.
Mm.
I'm not shutting the door on anything. I'm just wanting to expand. But even to have my own podcast show, I want to know, well, what am I going for? What's the point? What's the target? What's the purpose?
Right.
I mean, I know what the purpose is overall for LOA today. It's to give a daily dose of happy. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And to be perfectly honest, that's not my target. I did that with you because that was your target. And you've been very gracious to allow me to explore, you know, what comes into my world. But as I've been doing the show over time, I think it's been quite obvious. I've been diving deeper into personal transformation.
Oh, yeah.
And expressing how I've been going through my own personal transformation.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize that from the character in this movie, he has such a debilitating emotional state of being. And it only went downward. And it's like he didn't know how to get out of it.
Which is, I would say, is actually a very common problem, by the way.
Yeah. I mean,
not so much alcoholism or whatever like that, but just being in like sort of a spiral that's either very sharply downward or even just gently downward. And you just kind of get going and going and going, and you don't know how to turn it around.
Exactly. And if we haven't been taught what to do with our emotions and what to do with our deep feelings, then we have these messages that go unread. It's like setting up an email account with God, and God is sending you email messages on a regular basis, but you don't ever check your email.
Yeah, that doesn't work too well.
There's really important information that's valuable to you, but you didn't get the message.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one told you once you set up your email account, you have to actually open the app and go look at the messages in there. And that's what I think a lot of humanity has never really understood, which is how to go and open their email from their higher being. And all the messages we've ever needed come to us on a regular basis through our emotions, through our feelings. And I'll give you an example. I was talking with a client, and she's doing great in terms of she's turning her life into what she's wanting it to become. And she has, you know, the typical roller coaster stuff that most of us do. And really why she hired me was she had really just recently learned about law of attraction and wanted to talk with somebody who could help her navigate her life through the teachings of law of attraction. But on one particular session, I said to her, I know you hired me because you wanted me to teach you more about law of attraction, but I said, I'm also a personal transformation coach. And I sense that what you're talking about today requires some personal transformation, which, by the way, doesn't have to be a big, scary thing. And we actually did it within 10 minutes of a conversation. And she even said, hey, didn't you say we were going to start working on some new technique? I said, oh, we already did it. So I mean, it's so seamless. She didn't even realize we did it.
Right.
But we did it. But I know that there was transformation in our conversation. But here's how it kind of played out. She tells me, okay, here are all the bad things going on in my life. And she named about five of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started like reframing it going, I know what I need to do is think about this more positively.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the intuitive hit. Not yet. Like, yes, there is definite, there's a good practice in wanting to recognize you're talking negatively and you want to pivot and you want to turn it into a more positive conversation. I get that. And of course, that's a huge part of law of attraction. But I said to her, here's where, because I was getting all sorts of guidance on her behalf. I said, here's where I think it's appropriate to do a little piece of personal transformation. Because I said, you're feeling these feelings of overwhelm and anxiety and frustration, you're angry. But I said, if you just go, yeah, that's there, whatever, and now I got to turn into, I got to think positive, things are working out for me. I said, you're leaving a bunch of messages on the table. And she's like, what messages? And I said, exactly. Because this was a new concept. I mean, she didn't hire me for the personal transformation. Well, I believe she did. That's just not what her conscious awareness was when she hired me.
Right.
And I said, okay, let's get into the feelings. So we, you know, I had her kind of reiterate some of, quote, the negative stuff and the negative circumstances. But then I said, and how do you feel about that? And you know what? That is something I go through with multiple clients. They want to tell me about it.
Oh, yeah.
They want to tell me about the feeling. And they'll say, well, it's like blah, blah, blah. I said, no, we can't use the word like. Because when you use the word like, you're actually separating yourself from the feeling. Well, how does this feel? Well, it's like, you know, when you go on a expedition, and no, not like, because that tells me they're in their head. They're not feeling. So I don't even know how many times I said, and how does it feel? And that was not an easy thing for her to get to.
Mm.
And that this is really the point of the conversation I'm wanting to have today, Walt, is so many of us don't even know how to really recognize a feeling, an emotional feeling, because we've habitually bypassed it by talking about it through all sorts of metaphors. And especially, have you ever paid attention to how often the word like?
Oh, God, all the time.
Vocabulary these days?
Not just these days, ever since I can remember. I mean, when I remember kids in school, you know, when I was in elementary school, like was out every third or fourth word out of their mouth. So it was just prevalent.
And I honestly don't remember it that far back. I know when like the Valley Girl conversation started happening
right.
Way back, I think in the 80s, the word like. That's when I started noticing it creeping in. But
oh, yeah.
Now I'm so aware of how people have the word like, and it almost makes sense. It's as though instead of using alcohol, food, shopping, or other things to anesthetize themselves and separate themselves from their feelings, we're using the word like to separate ourselves from our feelings.
Quite effectively, too.
Because when my client was saying, well, you know, it's like such and such. I'm like, no, what does it feel like? And then she'd say, what is it we're talking about? And I'm like, exactly. I can't tell you how often that happens. They lose track of it because they're doing everything they can to slip around and not actually find the feeling. So I repeated, okay, here's where we landed. You know, this is the issue on the table. Tell me how that feels. And so, you know, there was a word or two, frustrated, angry. Tell me more about frustrated. Okay. And then she was able to come up with something else. And she's like, sad. And now I really felt it with her. I was really tapped into her and I could feel the sadness. And I could sense that sadness was really uncomfortable for her to actually sit in for even 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went, you know, it's like, boom. And when
slip
the person
back
says,
out again. Yeah.
It's like they've gone back in their head.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in their feelings. And so here's a tip or trick. It works for most, not everybody, but most, to get her in her feelings. I said, look at your left wrist.
Hmm.
Look, move your eyes to the lower left, or look at your left wrist, as long as it's below your eyeballs. If you have your hand in the air, it won't work. But if your arm is like sitting at your lap, look to the left corner. Look at your left wrist. That's something that helps you get into your feelings and out of your head. So anyway, we finally got to her feelings and she finally, and I started to sense, oh, she's finally getting to what's underneath and underneath and underneath and underneath all these metaphoric stories. And then what I recognized is she kind of had a damned if she does, damned if she doesn't scenario where she really wants this positive thing, but in getting the positive thing, she also got this thing that she's now seeing as negative. Like now she's recognizing the results, and just to be make it easier, it's a divorce.
Uh-huh.
So she really wanted the divorce, couldn't wait for the divorce to be over. She wanted to do all these things when the divorce happens. But now that she's divorced, now there's some consequences she really hadn't given much thought to. And she's angry at the negative circumstances and she's wanting to blame her ex-husband for them. And I said, okay. And so here's what we did. I said, you basically created a double blind. You're really happy that you're divorced. It's what you've been wanting. But now there are consequences of the divorce that are negative that you hadn't considered.
Yeah.
And you want to blame him for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is like, well, yeah.
So what's wrong with that? I mean,
right. But we found a way, I'll just say this because it was really beautiful. I said, so this negative stuff that you're experiencing now that you're divorced, is it really horrible? She's like, yes. I said, okay. Now, is it absolutely horrible? Really? And she said, no. I said, isn't this what you really desired? Yes. I said, would you really want him to be back in your life and so this stuff wouldn't happen? No.
Now the passion starts to come out.
Yeah. And I said, so really you just have a double bind. And every time the negative stuff happened and the feelings were coming up, she was glossing over them by trying to get back into her law of attraction, think positively. But she missed all the messages. And so the message was, first of all, that she had this double bind. She didn't know that. Then there were other messages, you know, that she realized really weren't true. Such as that she felt like without her husband, she couldn't handle the things that were showing up in her world. And I said, is that true? Can you really not handle that? She's like, no, that's not true. I am handling it.
And tying that back to the original concept that these are messages coming from the inner being. It's not that the inner being is misleading her. It's that her conscious physical side is misleading herself and her inner being is pointing it out to her.
Yeah. And her inner being is wanting her to be aware. You are fully equipped to handle all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But she was being angry at her ex that now she had to deal with them. She felt like he left her holding the bag. And I said, did he really leave you holding the bag? And at first she said, yes. And then there's something magical about the word absolutely. I said, are you absolutely certain he left you holding the bag and you can't handle it? She said, no, that's not true. And I said, now let's move towards what is true. what do you really know? And that's when the messages started to come out. The message really is, she has more than enough resources to handle everything that's in her new life. And that she can handle whatever comes to her. And that her inner being is her greatest ally. And her inner being already has paved the way for everything that's going to happen going forward to make it something she can manage and handle. But she didn't know that before. She wasn't aware of it before because she was glossing over that beautiful message of how well her life is because she had negative feelings, because they were, the negative feelings were tied to old thoughts that she had not addressed. She hadn't challenged the thoughts. And that is what we do a lot. And that's how we end up living a messy, uncomfortable, unhappy life, is because we haven't challenged the thoughts that are associated with the feeling. Because when we challenge the thoughts, when we ask questions of the thoughts, and we can find the message our inner being has been guiding us to, it truly is like the clouds part and the sun starts shining again. And it starts to feel better. And after she and I went through that little conversation, which only took us about 10 minutes, took about 20 minutes for her to get with the program, if you will, for her to like get out of her head. And finally, she like was on the same page with me and willing to follow me. And then the actual conversation to turn it around literally took less than 10 minutes. You know, and when she hit the sad feeling and I could tell, ooh, she doesn't want to stay there, I just said to her, we don't have to hang here long. We just had to go here long enough to get the information that was necessary. And then we got to where she needed to be. And then about 5 minutes later, she goes, so when are we going to do that transformation thing?
Oh, okay.
Because she thought it was going to be some huge exercise. I was going to be step one. We have to do this. Step two. And it's like, it was just, it was really nothing more than I needed for her to acknowledge the negative emotions that existed and then for her to recognize those things really weren't true. And then lastly, to replace it with, well, what is it my inner being really wants me to know? It took us less than 10 minutes. Boom, boom, boom.
This is really a theme, though, that you've carried on for quite some time in our conversations, which is that behind every negative feeling, particularly the ones we run away from, but behind every negative feeling, there's actually a positive message going on there that we just got to get to so that we know what's really going on in our lives. But we don't think of it that way, do we? We think of it that, well, if it's negative, I got to stay away from it. So, I know, it doesn't matter whether there's a positive message back there or not, I'm just not going to go there.
So what I'm hearing you say is, I keep saying the same thing over and over and over. I just use different stories, different metaphors, because I'm convinced somebody's going to get it. I just got to say it in the way that they're going to get it, or they relate to it.
You're actually in good company, because it's exactly the same thing that Abraham says. They keep saying over and over again, you know, you can keep asking the same questions. We'll answer every question you ask, just so you understand it's always the same answer.
Always the same answer. It always goes back to our feelings. Now, it's funny, I'll sometimes say it always goes back to our thoughts. And there's truth to that, because every thought is connected to a feeling. So if I say it always goes back to our feelings, or it always goes back to our thoughts, since thoughts and feelings are connected, it's the same thing. Some people will hear the message better if I use the word thought. And some people will hear the message better if I use the word feeling. So I purposely go back and forth between the two, because I don't know what's going to be the thing that causes someone to go, oh, now I get it.
So you really are convinced then there really is no such thing as a thought that doesn't have a feeling associated with it.
That's my understanding. That's what I believe I've heard from Abraham consistently for the 11 years that I've been listening.
Which is important, because I think just about anybody listening and everybody who isn't listening could agree that there seem to be times in life when we have a thought and there's no emotional attachment to it. But apparently there is.
Well, and if a person says there's no emotional attachment, I will definitely agree with them they are not experiencing it in that moment in a conscious, aware way, because they've either pushed it down, pushed it aside, or are looking straight at it, but as though they are looking through a window. And so they're seeing the other side, but like a window is a solid fixed thing. It's just that it's transparent. The intention of a window is for you to see through it, but yet it is solid. Try putting your hand through it and you'll know it was solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And so oftentimes if a person says, nope, not feeling anything, that tells me how out of touch they are with their feelings.
Or to put it another way, it tells me how in observer mode they are. Because you're either an observer or you're a participant. And if you are an observer, it's like you're looking through that window. You're not participating at all. You're just kind of looking like, you know, you're lurking, right? You're a lurker.
You're a lurker. But we do have feelings. With every single thought we think, we do have feelings. Some people are only aware of negative feelings. Some people are only aware of positive feelings. Some people have compartmentalized things in such a way that, you know, like I used to think, oh, I'm a happy person, but I wasn't really feeling happy. I was thinking I was happy. And
right.
Thinking I was happy is different than feeling happy.
Yeah, one's a more observer, one's a participant. One is experiencing it, one's just kind of like, you know, talking from 5,000 feet up or something, like they're not actually there.
Yeah. I mean, the earlier part of my life, I spent primarily in my head. And yet, as I look back on it today, knowing what I know today, I was a big time feeler back then. I was highly sensitive to both human interaction, but also energetic interaction. And so much of it, when it was negative, was so overwhelming to my being, my senses. I didn't know what to do with it. And it was easier to just drown it out. Now, I chose food. That was my method. But other people choose other things, like talking.
Mm-hmm.
Today, cell phones.
Yeah.
Video games.
Mm-hmm.
Then of course there's the alcohol things, partying, overcommitting schedule, like where your schedule is so busy, you never have a moment to really stop and consider what you really feel because you're just moving from one thing to another. These are all distractions that we have created to avoid actually feeling our feelings.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it ironic
we feel
too?
Them. Go ahead.
Isn't it ironic though that when we're in that observing mode, when we're not actually feeling the feelings, we're just simply thinking about them as you're describing it. What we will often think of that as being the easier route. It's just easier to observe than it is to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at what happens when a person goes through the feeling process, which you just described, how somebody, you know, kind of broke through that barrier they had put up, that resistance they had put up, and felt the feelings, they had this tremendous experience that came out of it, it actually created a much greater sense of ease afterward. So it seems
Absolutely.
Easier to observe, but it actually produces more ease to participate.
Yes.
Which is really ironic. I mean, that kind of, you know, blows the mind of the person who says, well, I'm just the observer.
Well, have you heard the comment before about fear that, people are afraid of fear, and so they do all sorts of things to avoid the fearful situation.
Oh, sure.
But when, let's say, the fearful situation comes upon them anyway, they weren't able to avoid it,
mm-hmm.
oftentimes they'll go, oh, I don't know why I was so afraid of that. That was really not such a big deal.
Yep.
That's what happens so often with our negative emotions. But, you know, if we didn't learn when we were little that feeling negative emotions that were scary or unfamiliar, or we didn't know what they were, and we didn't say to an adult or somebody around us, like, this feeling is there, what do I do with it? you know, which most of us didn't. I mean, who would have even had it modeled like, I feel this scary thing, you know? Most of us just keep that inside. Then we grow up never really learning how to express our emotions and to feel our feelings and to realize that they're all really positive. Even when they feel negative, the positive side is that there's a really cool message in it. You know, and most of us don't get that when we're young. I mean, I love the fact that Rhonda has a 13-year-old son, and this is the kind of stuff she teaches her son.
Mm.
Like, wow, what a step up he has in life.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not afraid to feel a feeling and go, I don't know what to do with it. Mom, can you help me? What does this mean? And, of course, she's there to help.
Right.
But like most of us, I wasn't taught what to do with emotions. I had models in my family of my parents that when they experienced really negative, extreme emotions, I never saw anything positive come out of it.
Well, I was taught. I think we were all taught what to do with them. The question is, what were we taught? Was it anything good that we were taught? I was taught to stuff them.
Mm.
And I learned it really well, by the way. I was very, very good at it. I had lots of practice, and I became an expert emotion stuffer.
Well, and I watched my father, how he handled his very intense negative emotions was to one of two things. Either he went into silent mode, where he disconnected from everybody in the family and just didn't speak, or he would like go off on somebody and be screaming and yelling and be a rageaholic.
Mm.
Okay, so those were his two options.
Yeah.
What I learned from my mother is that when she had really deep, intense feelings, she would say, I need to go be myself, go be by myself. And she'd go into her room, close the door, and lie in bed. And so that was something actually I learned to do, which is when my emotions were overwhelming, I would just go lie down and be away from everybody and close the door. Mm-hmm. Now, what she did during that time, I didn't know. But that was kind of something that I did. But it kind of also let me know that she shut the world out when she was experiencing these emotions. So we never got to see how she processed them. The next thing we knew, she was out of her room and she was talking to us. And she was in a sort of good mood. But we didn't see what she did to process it. And
that's a common theme. That's a theme that a lot of people experience in various ways. I mean, Louise, for instance, talks about how with her own parents, she never got to see how the relationship actually worked. All she saw was the facade because they kept how the relationship actually worked behind closed doors. So when she got to be an adult, she didn't know how to make a relationship work because she had no model to follow. The only thing she had was the facade. So she tried to follow the facade, and the facade didn't work, so the relationships kept falling apart.
Mm-hmm. So over all these many podcasts I've done with you, I believe on a quite regular basis, I share how I feel about things.
Mm-hmm.
And I do so with the intent purpose of giving a model for here's this negative thing that I was feeling. Then I found what the thought was that was behind that feeling. I recognized, ooh, that feeling's not even true.
Right.
And then I talked about how I find what is the positive feeling that my inner being is trying to say, this is your truth.
Now, for somebody who's trying to learn the method, so to speak, and I think I can count myself as one of those, every once in a while I will get to a point where there is something going on, some sort of undefined resistance. And I can tell there's some kind of thought there. I can't really tell what the thought is. There's some kind of feeling there. I can't really tell what the feeling is. And I'm not sure what to do with it at that point. Now, often I'm able to get through with, you know, talking to Louise or talking with one of you guys or something like that. But there are times when I just don't have one of those resources available to me. And I'm sitting there trying to figure out how do I connect to it? What do you do with somebody who's just, they know there's something there, but they just can't seem to put their finger on it. And then they start saying, well, it's like.
Yeah, that word like shows up.
There it is. Because you don't know what to do with it, right?
So I learned this phrase in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, that for me was quite helpful when I was learning how to do this for myself, when I was alone and I was trying to figure out, you know, what is it I'm feeling? So if, let's just say I had an interaction with somebody and it kind of sparked off or triggered some negative feeling. And I think to myself, okay, I want to go work on this one. So, you know, I go find a comfortable, quiet chair where I'm not distracted. And I use the phrase, for what purpose?
Hmm.
So I'd say, okay, so I'm feeling, even if it's undefinable, okay, and I'm feeling this, for what purpose? And I just kind of pay attention to whatever floats through my head or my feelings. I might get a phrase of, because they're stupid. Okay, so for what purpose do I want to say they're stupid? Well, it makes me feel better. Okay, cool. So for what purpose do I want to feel better? Because I don't like to feel bad. Okay, for what purpose do I not like to feel bad? Well, because I thought I heard that feeling bad is bad. Okay, so for what purpose do I want to think that thought?
Mm-hmm.
And can you see how every time I ask the question, I get a different response. Some of them lead me somewhere and some of them don't, but I just keep asking. And I learned through, I don't remember who I learned this through, but I remember hearing that there's a process where they used a different phrase, but for what purpose kind of gets you to the same thing, that sometimes you have to go a minimum of 7 times that you ask the question, for what purpose? As in like the first maybe 4 or 5 times you ask it, you're really dealing just with your conscious mind, the thinking, kind of the obstinate child that doesn't want to play the game kind of response.
Well, yeah, that was
Does that make sense?
That was the thought that I was thinking about when you were describing the process, because I could just as easily see that process turn into something like, what's the phrase? How do you use the phrase?
For what purpose?
For what purpose, yes. So for what purpose do you feel that thing in your gut? And some answer comes out like, well, you know, it's better than feeling the pain of it. So for what purpose is it that you don't want to feel the pain of it? Well, because it's just stuck in my gut. And so you get into a circle, right? And it becomes
right.
An endless circle at that point. That endless circle to me sounds like somebody who is resisting the process and just saying, I don't want to be in that process.
Exactly. Exactly. But there's almost, I mean, if you have a true, and this is important, if you truly have an intention that you want to break through this and get underneath and get to the bottom of it because you want to resolve it, if you keep going in loops and circles like you just described, you don't really want to change.
Right.
You don't really want to change.
Which is a bit of an eye-opener, actually.
Exactly. But then you get to, because like I deal with what I would call the obstinate child. I'll go 5 levels deep of for what purpose. And now I start to feel a new emotion. Now I get really angry, like quit asking the damn question. I don't want to hear for what purpose one more time. So I'm like, whoa, okay, Wendy, that was an interesting response. Didn't expect that.
Mm.
So what purpose did you get so hot under the collar?
At which point, the other part of you is saying, oh, shut up, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Yeah, well, if you truly want an answer, I promise you, you keep asking the same damn question over and over, you'll get a response out of yourself.
It's
you'll start
true,
to find
yeah.
something that is kind of like, didn't expect to see that. Or I've had this happen where I'll ask again, and I burst out in tears.
Does part of yourself ever challenge you to a fist fight? I mean, I'm kind of curious.
Sometimes I feel like I do. But, you know, when I burst out in tears, that's when I know I just touched the raw feeling, even if I can't identify it.
Mm, yeah, it is a breakthrough, isn't it?
And then I can say, Wendy, and I'll talk to me softly.
Mm-hmm.
For what purpose does this hurt so bad that you feel the need to cry?
Mm.
And it's okay that you're crying, but what's that about? Talk to me. What's the purpose of that? What is it you're really wanting to reveal? And then it might be, I needed a hug.
Oh.
Really? Who didn't give you a hug? My mom. Well, what was going on? Such and such happened. I got a boo-boo and she was too busy talking on the phone and I just needed a hug.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I'll say, oh, okay. So I wonder, when mom didn't give you a hug, what did you decide? I decided never to trust an adult because they're never there. Well, that's interesting.
It's quite a breakthrough.
Well, here you are, a grown adult. Is that true today? Yes, that's true today because the little girl in me is talking. That sure feels true today. Can't trust any adult. And then I say, is it absolutely true that there's not one adult in your whole life that you've ever been able to trust? Oh, well, there have been a couple. You know, and that's the breaking me up part. That's the taking the facade that was on the outer surface and getting deeper and deeper and deeper until the real wound gets exposed. And when the real wound is exposed, when I'm doing it with myself, and I'll do this for a client as well, I get really tender and sweet and gentle and nurturing because that's what that child desperately needed. Mm-hmm. For someone to hear her pain and acknowledge what she felt. And then once there's an acknowledgement, and like I can tell if I start breathing deeply, it's like I'm releasing all the stuff I've been penting up that I've been holding on to for so long. And then I say, what do you really need? What do you need right now? And the answer might be to know that it's going to be okay. And then I might say something like, and do you know that it's going to be okay? Well, I want to. Okay. What does your inner being know? Now, here's me as the adult going, well, I know my inner being knows that everything is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I might say something like, and can you trust your inner being? Because she's been with you since before you were born. And she kind of sees the big picture. And she already knows how it's going to be okay. And if you can look in the direction of just hanging on to her, she'll guide you and lead you. And at that point, like I can tell, I don't even know if I'm working on something right now. I could be because my feelings are very real in this moment.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't even know what it's attached to, but it's like I tapped into something.
Huh.
And, you know, I can say, can you just hang on to your inner being? Can you just trust your inner being? Because your inner being is not a person who has flaws. Your inner being is connected to all truth, all wisdom, all insight. And can you just hang on for the next few moments and let your inner being take you into a place that will feel safe? And I can sense myself saying, yeah, I'm willing to do that. And then once I'm in a better feeling place, then I say, now let's think about that original thing where we started, where the person that I just had the conversation with really upset me. How has that changed now? And I will say something like, yeah, that doesn't even matter anymore. I'm
mm-hmm.
over it.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, I really am over it because the entire reason that that thing was triggered to begin with was not because of that exchange that you had as an adult with this person at the grocery store. That was just a triggered experience to take you back to this childhood thing when I had a boo-boo and mom was too busy on the phone to actually pay attention to me, nurture me, and give me a hug. Once we take care of, I really needed a hug, we're good.
Yeah, so that was basically the process of releasing a resistance level when you had to add it all up. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, lots of times, Walt, on the show, we talk in what I would call kind of big picture language, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, there's resistance there. Well, what I just did is I got down to what the actual resistance was all about, what mm-hmm. its purpose was. And so when you get down to the specifics, when the personal transformation part of it takes place, we're not talking about resistance. Little children don't know the word resistance.
True.
You know, and most of the time when I deal with, when something needs to be reframed, like I just did in that illustration, most of the time it's something that's very childish. Not because they're being, you know, like a bratty little child, but it's a childlike feeling, a childlike experience that the child just didn't get their needs met. They didn't know what to do. You know, when we're children, we don't have the resources of how to make a boo-boo not feel so horrible. But when you're little, you think it's the end of the world because you don't know not to. And nobody has soothed your pain for you to realize, oh, not only was it not a big deal, but I can move through it pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that it's almost always a child or a childlike thing or something from childhood. Is it always?
Not always, but oftentimes. The majority of what I would consider the transparent negative beliefs happened in childhood when we didn't have a logical mind developed yet for us to know what to do with these things. So they're just kind of in this big black hole, if you will. I just made that up, but it's like a black hole of all this stuff you didn't know how to get explained to you when you were younger.
So now, it does happen later on, too.
Pardon me?
I guess the inference is that it sometimes is something that can happen later on after you become an adult or a young adult.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if a young guy goes into Afghanistan as a soldier and he experiencing something that's just atrocious, he comes home with
PTSD. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. He doesn't have to, but he might. Mm-hmm. So that might not have been a childhood trauma that happened to him when he was 3. That was something that happened to him when he was 18 or 19.
And they don't have to be severe traumas, do they? Even for an adult, I would think.
No. No, I mean, the little metaphor that I just did was I got a boo-boo. I wanted mom to tell me how to handle the fact that I got a boo-boo.
Mm-hmm.
And mom wasn't available to me. Now, that's not a trauma on the level of somebody going into war.
No.
But for a child's psyche, it is traumatic. I mean, it's all relative as to how we look at it from an adult perspective.
Yeah, I think.
But from a child's perspective,
the question I was asking, though, is it for an adult, does it have to be traumatic? Or can it be a non-traumatic event that still sticks with you?
It can be a non-traumatic event that still sticks with you. Like mom didn't give me a hug. That's a non-traumatic event. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. And yet here I am as an adult, you know, going into rage because somebody didn't hold the door open for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is when we make decisions and come to conclusions, when we're really little, about life or about people or about trust, we carry that into our adulthood until we recognize the lack of truth to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to ask, though, is it possible for one of those non-super traumatic events to happen and originate in adulthood and have that be the buried thing? That's what I'm trying to get at.
I would say it rarely happens, only because as adults, we have fully formed logical minds that can sort out information and come to more appropriate conclusions.
Okay.
That's why if somebody doesn't hold the door open for me today, it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But if I decided when I was really little due to something about, you know, I can't trust adults and I never resolved that, then maybe today as a grown adult, I walk into a place and an adult walks through a door and lets it slam right behind them. That could trigger the feeling I had when I was very small.
Yeah. Okay.
And every time I've recreated it, because that vibrational frequency is started when I was a kid, every time I recreate it, another something could get added to it. So it could become really a big deal.
Yeah, it can kind of accelerate. That's true. We've run out of time, but let's continue the conversation on Thursday because I think we've laid a good baseline here, and then we can learn more, you know, what do we do with it?
Absolutely.
All right, and we hope that you'll join us next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye for now.